Listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, I'm Morgan Quaintance and this is Studio Visit. Now, one of the great things about contemporary art are those rare moments where you stumble across an artist you've never seen before, but whose work, aesthetic, approach and content seem to offer something you've been waiting for a long time. I was lucky enough to experience one of those moments during a screening of films by my guest this month. Kevin Jerome Everson is an artist and filmmaker whose works, from historical reenactments to a type of metaphysical ethnography, combine striking formal techniques with an ability to wrestle the extraordinary and the poetic from the everyday. I caught up with Kevin while he was briefly in town for a set of screenings and a premiere at London Film Festival, and began by asking about the physicality of filmmaking. During the post-screening Q&A a few days ago at the Tate, like I asked you a question about how prolific you were, but what I was really thinking about was practice and about the physical nature of filmmaking and about being comfortable with your camera and your environment, about sort of building a kind of muscle memory. How important is that embodied notion of practice in your approach to making work?
I mean, that's probably the main source of my content is just always keep making. I mean, like in the United States, the visual arts is a discipline you learn like when you're in your late teens. Like the representational art, performative arts like music and dance and acting, you can learn like 6 and 7. But the visual arts, I mean, high school art is just to keep kids out of trouble, you know. But when you get into college, like that's when you learn art or visual arts. And then so the body doesn't understand how to practice until much later. So I've always been one, like, making things all the time just to keep the kind of muscles going, to, you know, like mentally and physically. And then also, too, I think the prolific, I guess, of it is I come from a fine art photography background. And in that discipline, you have to make a body of work. And then so to understand, so you always have to have, so your work will tell you what to do next because you can take a look at it and stuff and see where you can move for your next, just how to move forward. And then films, too, as well. I can't just make one thing. I was like, let me make another one and see, you know, and this kind of, you know, because some of the films I showed the other night were actually a gateway to other films and stuff like that, so to speak, yeah. So what I plan on doing in the future, so, yeah.
And when did you start to develop an awareness of that approach being important? Because, like you say, you're not schooled with an awareness of it in the same way that maybe a musician might be, that you or a sports player, you know, or a boxer. We can talk about that in a bit. But so when did you develop this awareness that you needed to have a kind of physical engagement with the apparatus and also with just thinking through the work?
I think from street photography, because you always have your camera on you all the time, so you're always reminded because your camera's swinging from your side. So you're always reminded that you're making art, you know, and then it's part of your apprenticeship. I mean, it's part of your arm, it's part of your leg, and then, like, your camera. So you're always in the mindset of framing and the composing an image, so to speak. So that's been kind of early on, whatever. And I'm still actually looking for a film camera where I can carry every day, like the still photography. I've been looking for that for almost like 15 years or whatever.
I wanted to talk a bit about like your arsenal, because like sometimes filmmakers might favor a specific camera, or they have a specific aesthetic trademark that is recognizable, but you have you move between stocks and move between formats.
Actually, you know, lately I've just been shooting with an Arri-S, you know, with the 12 to 120 Angelou lens, because I like the way it feels and I like the way it looks, whatever like that. But if that thing was smaller, it'd be amazing. But, you know, I got to haul that thing in the back of my trunk all the time. So I like that kind of camera more so. But I think it just depends on the subject matter more so than anything else, whatever. And it depends on where I'm going and then you have, sometimes I don't want to be imposing, so I'll use something kind of smaller, like HD. And also, too, I like to go back to the core of the stuff. Like, when I'm shooting film, I'm trying to expose the viewer to something, or expose me to something, or expose the subject matter to something. And then when I'm using HD or something like that, I'm just recording the gesture and stuff like that for either the subject matter or for myself, whatever. Yeah.
And what about presence? Because I think when shooting 16mm, it's quite difficult to like disappear in some ways.
Well, I don't never want to disappear. Right. I always want to be like, I want the viewer, well, I want the subject matter to know that I'm there. So sometimes I'm like, so sometimes the way the camera or where I'm standing, I can activate the scene more so. So it's like from my street photography days where I used to, so I'd tap somebody on the shoulder to get them to look back at the camera so we can balance the composition. So I always like to be kind of with manipulating the form, whatever, just why I'm out there, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah. That struck me when you sort of mentioning that you sort of feel primarily your approach is as a street photographer.
Yeah.
And then when you were talking about composing an image, yeah, there was a sense of sort of engaging with what was happening in front of you as opposed to just being, you know, the intrusive flasher. So, not in this, like, exposing yourself, but...
Yeah, well, maybe. if that's what it takes.
Yeah.
That's what it takes to get the image right.
But, you know, like, sometimes I've seen people just walking down the street and, you know, they just shove it in someone's face and take a photo.
Yeah,
but you were sort of, you're within...
Well, I like to ask the person first. I was like, hey, well, do you mind if I... I like what you're doing. I think what you're doing is, like, amazing and beautiful. I think you're an artist in a way. Do you mind if I, like, you know... spend some time and like expose this to this particular camera, and then so they either say yay or nay, whatever, you know. But I think the only film, I think one of the films that I really kind of got there was that film Stone, where that guy was doing the shell game, and then so I had to like, so I walked up on that, and actually I shot a 16mm version of that too as well. But then it was mostly for, I think I had a 7D on me, like a Canon 7D on me. And so I just, like, held it around it just so I can kind of get the kind of energy of the place. I would like to do actually more films like that, kind of walk up on stuff like that. But I just happened to be in Columbus, Mississippi at a Juneteenth celebration, so there was a massive amount of people there anyway. So I knew I'd find something. So I took, like, two cameras with me. But I like that kind of energy, or, like, finding more things like that.
Mm.
And then even in the film Eerie, where the guy was trying to get into his own car.
Yeah.
His own car. Yeah, I would like to find more. But most of the stuff I do is mostly choreographed. And or to look like that, choreographed to look like I just happened to walk up on it. And then, so that's what I am. But I'd like to kind of walk up on things more. But I do like to kind of choreograph and with the kind of happy accident, so to speak. Yeah.
I think that choreography, and again, I suppose that goes back to this notion of a kind of fluency, proficiency with what it is that you want to do through doing it quite a lot. Is that a lot of that effort vanishes in the end product. So the audience experiencing the work, I feel, because of the ease of viewing, it feels as if the filmmaking itself was very easy to do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I like to, I mean, you know, I know I make a lot of films, but I think if some people see a film, they probably think, oh, well, that's your only film. Well, that's fine with me. You know, because they don't have to know, like, this is my whole practice, a part of my practice, but... So, but that's fine, because I like to, again, a lot of times I like, and even the films I choreograph, it's almost choreographed as if the viewer came in the middle of something, and then when the film's over, that event's going to keep on going until after the viewer left. So you know, so it's kind of like a snapshot, or like a kind of just abstract, just kind of taking reality apart for a second and then make an abstraction toward toward those moments, whatever, yeah. Mm.
But thinking about, like, street photography again a little bit, though, you know, I suppose in some ways people might be seduced into saying, or there might be an easy parallel to reach for, which is like, yeah it's really like photography as film. Mm-hmm. But it's not just like a static image that has movement in it. Like, you haven't framed something, left it there, although that may happen.
Yeah.
But one of the things I was struck by was your ability to frame. So sometimes you might be shooting something and you're able to move into these frames constantly, like the camera is moving, but each of those images has the intensity of a still or a moment that's been really thought about.
Well, I think, I think the reason why I'm still, that I, I'm, I guess I abandoned street photography, but I think the reason why is that I like the duration. You know, I like that something could, that I could compose something for 6.5 minutes or 7 minutes or 11 minutes, you know, so to speak. So I like that whole idea of being a moment. And then within that duration, something can happen that, or the potential for something to happen and stuff. So I like that kind of tension. So I think that's the difference, whatever. It's just that I'm looking for the duration, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think there was a film I did a while ago called, what the heck is it called?
Yeah, that's the issue of having 140 films.
like Pictures from Dorothy. So I had this kind of fictional characters that were in The Wizard of Oz. And then I remember being in Mississippi, and then I was with my co-writer because we were doing research on like another film. And I remember seeing this guy tearing down this kind of a shed or something, this metal shed. And then so he was banging on the outside of it. And then I saw him disappear, and I just stayed there. And then I was hoping, but I wasn't sure. Then he went inside the thing and knocked the wall out from the inside. And then that balanced the composition. And then that's something that that you can't do in photography, you know. So you have to wait. So sometimes you got to wait for something to happen. And I think ever since I shot that, I've been looking for that more so. So that was a kind of a pivotal formal thing. I forgot. This is the first time I ever said this out loud. Mm-hmm. So the London audience gets to hear this for the first time.
Yeah.
But I think that was a pivotal moment. It's like, oh man, like this is what. Like, it was like street photography because I just pulled up the car and saw these cats doing this, and I just walked out and filmed them. And then, but the whole idea of, like, staying still and waiting for something else to happen, too, as well, to kind of, and then for me, that what the audio and the visual balances out the composition for that particular duration of time, whatever. So I like that. And then, you know, I like making that, too, as well, and even choreographing that kind of gesture.
Yeah, duration seems to be the challenge and the gift, really, that your films request and impart.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is, like, the films feel really, really accessible in that, like I say, the challenge isn't like an esoteric body of knowledge that you've come to grips with and that the viewer must figure out somehow by looking at what you've done. But the challenge is to sit with and let the film unfold. But I think in doing that, that sort of leaves you with a sort of greater ability to step into the world and let things unfold, like you to sort of slow things down and pay a bit of attention.
Yeah, I mean, because it's almost like, I like things that people would actually kind of walk past and ignore, and so there is a kind of a gesture in that. I think that's kind of fascinating, whatever. And then another moment, I remember a time we were in Memphis at a family reunion, and we're like going to actually the why can't I remember this? The Lorraine Hotel where Martin Luther King was assassinated. So they have a great museum there. It's actually pretty fascinating. It's actually pretty moving, actually, too, as well. So I remember we were kind of in a caravan of cars, and then I was doing street photography at the time, so it must have been the 90s. And I remember seeing this guy trying to get his we drove past, and I saw this guy, this brother, trying to get, I think, a barbecue grill out of this like garage and like banging on it. And I was like, stop the car. But my cousins wouldn't stop the car.
Yeah, yeah.
And then so my son was in the car ahead of me, and he said, man, my dad must be going crazy. And soon we got to Lorraine Hotel, I just grabbed some of these car keys and went back there. My boy knew that I was like, this is something. I took him with me, but I wasn't sure. I was like, I got to go back and find that cat. So I went back, and the guy in the gesture was already gone. Mm-hmm. You know, it was one of those moments where like, man, that was like, that would have been a whole like 15 rolls of film. I don't know. Like, everybody spent the whole day there. So probably glad that it didn't happen. But, you know, it was those kind of things that like, you know, like you look at something like that, or I look at something like that, or like I respond to something like that. Yeah, because it was like a tin caravan car, and nobody responded to it except for me and then my son, who was like used to me, like, look at that cat, you know. And then so the fact that like I saw that, I thought that was important, like what this guy was struggling to feed people, you know. So there's a kind of a metaphor there, right? This guy was struggling to either make money or, you know, to sell, like, you know, barbecue, whatever. And or the, you know, it was that kind of survival, that kind of gesture that was hidden within that little, you know, like that moment. So I would probably would have framed it up to either like make it, you know, either who's wanting to make money or who's going to feed, you know. So then it's up to me to reposition myself and like the camera and like the frame to, you know, to bring that out, whatever, because that's not what he's doing, but that's what I'm responding to. So for me, it's all about what I respond to that moment and to that gesture and how I can frame it up and say something else, whatever. Yeah.
And it feels like, you know, you've become easy to read events as they're occurring, that you have that intensity of vision through.
That's experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just been doing it forever. I'm an old man.
So, like, I wanted to talk about that in relation to, let's talk about Stone. Yeah. So, Stone was a film that you made. You were sort of filming a guy running his sort of street hustle, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the hustle was a free, what's the word for it? It's like a free cup.
Yeah, it's like a,
follow the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Just follow the ball, and then you bet somebody, like, it's one or, like, the ball is under one or three caps or cups, whatever. Yeah.
And it's so that I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, okay, how can I break down like a Kevin Jerome Everson film? Like, what are the things that are happening for me? I tell you why I thought that, because I was with somebody at the screening you did a few days ago, and we came out, and I was just like blown away by you had done.
Yeah.
And they had said, I said, oh, that was brilliant. This guy's amazing. And they said, I kind of get it. It's like, it's like an African American gaze on everyday life. But I mean, if it was somebody who wasn't a person of color, would it be interesting? I was like, you've totally not gotten what's going on. You know?
Yeah.
You totally don't understand just the whole language of filmmaking before you even get to the content. It's just the way it's put together,
where
the lens is, how he's moving. I mean, all of these things to
and
me.
And the audio cues too.
And I guess maybe that goes back to the, to your proficiency and the ease with which it's easy, people can digest it, that it dupes them into not actually making the effort to view it, you know, to rising to the occasion.
Yeah, that's true. Because that formal, because there's a content, of course there's that. Brother out there hustling cats. But, you know, to get to that, you know, I have to like formally compose it, so then that becomes apparent, or not apparent, it depends on. And then, you know, like, that's my decision to either make it apparent or not apparent, whatever,
So I thought, okay, how do I break it down? So I was so you've got, in some films, because maybe in the shorter pieces, you have an event, framing, a type of presence, and then your own, like, interaction with the subject.
Yeah.
And that takes place off camera, but it seemed to me that those three things, the event, the framing and the presence of the subject are really, really powerful and totally, for me, unique. So we've talked a bit about event and we talked about framing. And what about presence? Like, how do you, these sometimes, I wouldn't say larger than life people, because I feel like what happens in your films is that you're just, again, maybe encouraged to look again at humanity. So what is it how are you recognizing these people that are due more attention?
You just kind of audition in your head, like, this cat is interesting or not, you know. He's just like kind of funky looking. I'm like he had a great voice, he had a great presence, and then he was on the grind, so I like that. And then also, too, that for me, there's immediate backstory for me, because this guy's an artist, you know. So me being an artist, I'm trying to find a person who understands all the sophisticated relationships in their craft, because I understand all the sophisticated relationships I'm doing. So if this cat's understanding his sophisticated relationships, like the ball and the caps, but also he understands the crowd, you know, because he's on the grind, he's on the hustle, because he can't take things for granted, because that's a survival tactic. And then I'm thinking about that, but also too, I'm thinking about somebody taught him that. So there is a legacy, you know. So that guy spent hours at home, you know, or away, you know, practicing, you know, moving his hands, like, you know, stretching his hands. I mean, like, the guy's like a pianist, right? You know, he's got to do it. So when I'm looking through the viewfinder, I'm trying to, like, that's part of it. You know, because he just didn't show up. Like, that person existed, you know. So then I think if you're even writing a script, you have to kind of put in the backstory. You got to write in the backstory, like how would somebody would get like that? You know, so he had to have a mentor at some point. And then there's other people like teaching people how to hustle, the school of hustling, whatever. He is a graduate of the school, yeah. You know. And then so I like that as form, you know. And then for me, it's the kind of, you know, and I don't know if people kind of get that, but that's fine. But that puts me in the presence because then I understand this by framing. So right when I pull up and frame him full frame, just when you see his face, that's when I think the backstory shows up because now it's just not anybody doing it. It's this individual. And then some other individual taught that individual and then becomes more kind of personal, I think, in a weird way. Yeah.
Because you've spoken about, I think, if I remember it rightly, but that you regard the films as kind of narrative driven films. And maybe I might have made that up. But
yeah,
because I feel
well, there's some kind of narrator.
Yeah, yeah.
And even if the same thing happening for 11 minutes,
yeah,
it's still like, you know, time makes it narrative, but no matter, you know, I think like once you put people or things move, then there is a kind of an illusion or the potential for narration, I think. Yeah.
But like, there's also, you know, you by maybe holding back like certain expository details, like, so in your most one a film that's showing tonight, is it premiering tonight?
But Tonsler
Park. Tonsler Park.
Yeah.
And so Tonsler Park is a film that you made. I guess it was, could you call it a polling station?
Yeah, it was four polling stations in Charlottesville, Virginia, but November 9th or 8th or just whenever the election was.
Yeah, so for the 2016 election. Yeah. And it's filmed like, it's quite close-up framing of the...
Just telephoto framing of African-American election workers.
Yeah, and I mean, what I mean by shaving off like expository details is that, you know, you might have somebody showing people turning up, like you might have an image that says like polling station.
There's none of that. Well, there's no establishing shots.
But you don't need any of that. Like we know the language now so much.
Or maybe people don't, but that's okay. Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like I just want, you know, just to go like immediately into, I think, there was a swearing in process that I overheard that I liked, and then I put that in there. And then that's kind of the beginning, and then there's a swearing in at the end as well, so to speak. Just kind of make, you know, just, you know, I like that kind of swearing in because now that's your duty, you know. It's like, almost like, you know, your duty is to serve, I guess, so to speak. And then, so the film's trying to serve this in a weird way. Yeah, yeah.
It made me think, like, there is a kind of, there's a lot of performance.
Oh, totally.
In your films, like, not just like physical performance, but, you know, as in performative language, like official language that's doing something.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. I like that as form sometimes because I went to a couple of the meetings and there were people were super nice, but they let me film there. And I was like freaked. First thing I think they wasn't going to let me do it. But then I ended up getting this press pass so press can go in there. So, and then they were really nice. And then as long as I wasn't in the way, and I wasn't in the way. And so I liked the fact that, like, and then I was going to the meetings, I started hearing. So, you know, it's like a job, but also, too, it's a kind of a civic duty in a weird way. So, like, I thought, well, I like people volunteering for this kind of thing. And then so I didn't show any of that, but that kind of got me kind of more into. So I think if I hadn't went to those meetings and showing up, then, of course, the framing would have been different, so to speak. Yeah, like.
But, like, it encourages the viewer to fill it in.
Yeah.
You know, you're filling in that backstory, so you kind of become more invested.
Yeah, totally. Because the workers, because I think I think there's only maybe three male, and most of them are women, and then some of them are, and all the women of all ages. Mm. And then the end, we end with a younger woman, so who will potentially, and then, you know, when I'm putting it together, I was like, oh, I'm putting her at the end because she will potentially be at the beginning of another, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because this is her first one, so, you know, she'll be there forever, you know. Yeah.
And sound is really, I mean, we can talk about sound throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, Sandy Williams hooked me up, though. Sandy Williams IV hooked me up. Yeah,
so
sure, yeah.
were they on sound duties for Tonsler Park?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was like four of us, me, Jack Doiner, Anthony Resisto, and Sandy Williams IV, yeah.
So you usually work with quite small teams.
Yeah, don't you? Yeah. I don't like missing. I mean, just what I went to yesterday was like massive.
Yeah. So basically,
I went to...
Kevin went somewhere yesterday. We can't say where you went.
Yeah.
And we can't say what you saw. But if anybody knows film, they should probably have an idea of where you went.
Yeah, it was massive. Yeah. And that's something I was like, I mean, I like seeing that artistry being made with that, because there's a craft with that. And the things look beautiful there too, as well. But yeah, I just, like, I would get fired from day one if I worked on something like those people. And then, of course, I had, you know, but then I think I could do something like that. But I'd still like to kind of run and gun with the small team and stuff, just feed them and kind of figure out what we're going to do. And then so I can kind of think about what we're working on. Yeah. I think the bigger sets will be the short film I did before that. It's funny, like, the shorter film had like a massive crew and set.
Oh, which film was
that? How Can I Be Late?
Oh, yeah. A reconstruction of an event involving Sly and the Family Stone arriving somewhere and being picked up by students.
And me and my colleague, the brilliant Professor Caudrina Harold, we've been making these period pieces about the history of African Americans at the University of Virginia. Mm-hmm. And then there's a story when the black students picked up Sly and the Family Stone for a concert. Sly was not happy because it was colder than what it was, and they all crammed into some student's car. A lot of music. So we reenacted that, whatever, you know. So that was fun to do. And then I brought down my man Khalil Pettisai from Cleveland to help with the crew. Mm. And then I had a bunch of students in it, and then we had a bunch of students kind of help up with the crew. So those films that we've done, and you saw Sugar Coated Arsenic.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest film I've done, because it was 40 extras and students helping me and stuff like that. So, but other than that, I like to either shoot by myself or maybe three other people. Yeah.
And then the other aspect of your practice is like working with found footage.
I don't do that as much as I don't. Yeah, I used to do that a lot because I was finding a lot of stuff. And then that was fun. And even when I got found footage, it was also it was mostly audition film. Like, how did it look? How was it shot? And who performed in it? Like the Muhammad Ali stuff, Fido Castro, and then so there was a bunch of other short, and then the mayor of Cleveland, kind of thing,
But you know, Sly, I mean, this is a little bit off topic, but Sly is such a complex character. Have you seen that clip of him and Muhammad Ali like sparring on a talk show?
Sly,
Sly Stone. And it's on YouTube. It's worth checking out because you know, Muhammad Ali's doing his like slightly still kind of separatist, but black nationalist.
Because probably on the Merv Griffin show, because everything always happened on the Merv Griffin show.
Yeah. Whereas Sly is sort of saying, you need to chill out, we all need to be together. And there's this weird moment where he's like, look, I don't want to, we're supposed to be together. And it's
so they're on a couch on a show?
Yeah. Well, they're on chairs, but it's like, you know, a traditional kind of panel thing. I'll try and find it and send you links.
Yeah. That's kind of fast. Oh, wow. Well, that brings it all together.
Yeah. But, you know, with sound, you don't use sync sound so much.
No, because the apparatus I use doesn't, the RES is not a sync sound camera.
But then you could also, I mean, there are sync sound, there are cameras made for sync.
I have them. Yeah, I have them. But I just like to use that particular camera.
But for me, like, it felt like, what happens when you, because it's not just you have an image and the sound from some other place. Like it's sound from the same place.
Yeah, different times. Yeah, just put it. Yeah, I mean, just adds a it just adds to the composition of the atmosphere, I think, sometimes.
For me, it separates those elements. It makes them all the more powerful. It makes me feel like if you had synced some of them, then I wouldn't be paying as much attention to both.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I like shooting silently, but thinking auto, but thinking about the audio. And when I was filming, did you see the Italian film?
Rhino.
Yeah, Rhino. Like, that's all sync because I was using the digital Bolex and I had the headphones on. And then, so I'm trying to, like, record the audio and get them and make sure it's both.
Yeah.
And then so that kind of handcuffs me a little bit, you know, formally, because I can't get, because I got to be a certain distance from the
from
subject.
Them to
yeah. And then so in Tonsler Park, which was great because I can't record them the workers talking because they're taking names. So they're doing things that should be private, you know, so then I have to kind of, so my sound person is far away from me, just getting kind of audience. I like kind of building that, just kind of putting together just like a sculptor or whatever, so to speak. You know, and then so making it necessary, although it, you know, although they're separate, but they're the same, so to speak.
So I want to go back again to the sort of the embodied film practice. It did make me think when I was watching the recent couple of films, Round Seven, which I was lucky enough to get a premiere. Well, in my bedroom, you know, like coming out next year officially. So it was Round Seven and A Good Fight.
Yeah.
And they're both sort of centered around a fight between Sugar Ray Leonard
and Art McKnight.
Art McKnight.
The local, like gentleman that was from Ohio and from Mansfield, Ohio at the time.
And it seemed to me that, like, yeah, this idea of a sense of physical fluency comes back again. So in films like, or even in Stone, you can say there's a certain attention to physical dexterity in that.
Yeah.
In Tigers, there's also
the
team doing football drills.
Yeah.
But in also in Round Seven and A Good Fight, but also in the film, and I didn't know the title of it. I couldn't remember the title of it. But I think it's relatives of yours who used to work at a car plant.
And they're talking?
Yeah.
Erie. That's part of Erie.
Is that part of Erie?
Yeah, that's why I couldn't
remember it. But behind that is almost, so it's almost like there's a lesson in the films. On one hand, you're saying, you know, attention to rehearsal, repetition, disciplining the body, physical activity is important. And then when it's overlooked, that some sort of it's almost like it shouldn't be overlooked. So the physical expertise
you can't overlook it.
The plant workers is ignored and they're let go. But also in the Round Seven, I thought that was a really amazing meeting of both of those things. So on one hand, you have you have him saying Art McKnight saying fighting is 25% ability, 25% heart, and 50% conditioning.
And
I was like, is that how you view what you're doing?
Well, I don't know about the heart.
Oh yeah, we can put something else in there.
Maybe I don't know. You know. What did you say? 25% heart,
25% heart, 25% ability, and 50% conditioning.
Oh no, I think ability. I think mental.
Oh okay.
Yeah, so, I think it's mental.
Oh,
yeah,
okay,
I think it's
you're
mental.
Right.
Mental.
Yeah.
I think it's more mental than physicality, whatever. Yeah, because it depends on. Yeah, I think it's more for art. I think you got to make the thing. So either you're gonna form it out or you're gonna do it yourself, but. But I think it's mostly like mental discipline, I think. Yeah. And that's kind of like, I think that's Art McKnight's math, whatever.
I was a bit, it's a bit hazy, but like,
there was something. I mean, he believes in him, because I remember just doing the audio, like, he said it multiple times. He said it multiple times.
And then that has to come in the referee, purposely or not recognizing his conditioning, but that he was doing the rope-a-dope, right?
He was trying. His plan was it was an 8-round fight, and then he was trying to wear out Art McKnight so he can.
Was trying to wear out Sugar Ray.
Leonard. So he was. So his strategy was that he was going to just brawl in the 8th round, and that would be the outcome of the fight. But the refs called it for no reason at all. And I remember, and so Art didn't have any, just when I talked to him just with this calendar year, he didn't have regrets on it. But I remember seeing footage of it, and then you can't find it anymore. And I remember the people who were there were saying that the people were throwing chairs onto, people were like actually rioting.
Really?
It was crazy. And so I have that shot in the film, and Art was standing on the ropes, like pleading to the audience, like, don't stop, so he protested more during the fight. But then he didn't protest this when we're doing the audio. And so when we were shooting that scene with this young boxer, Armand Richards, and then I had him stand on the rope, and then Art didn't say anything. I said, Art, like, that's what you did. And he's like, I mean, he didn't kind of like, he had said that you pleaded to, your supporters, and then he just kind of like washed over that in a weird way. But he didn't like tell us not to film it or anything like that. But that was one of the shots that I had to have, like, at the end was Art protesting. But then, so I like the fact that in the film he's protesting, but in like the visuals he's protesting, but in the audio he's not protesting.
Yeah, yeah. Like he become a bit more philosophical.
Yeah, like about the history of fighting, and he said Sugar Ray's done more for fighting than I would ever did. So like that was like a that took a lot of in fact that took more guts.
To say
that than more so than getting in the ring with Sugar Ray.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting, but yeah, Art was a cool cat though. I mean, it's interesting working. So I like working with people like that. Just making films. Mm. And, you know, actually, I talked to Art last night because I think he pocket dialed me and he thought I called him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then so I told him I was lonely. He's like, man, you go everywhere. But So it was interesting for him to. I like people like that talking about their craft. And I had another film called Cinnamon where it's about drag racing. And then I remember my whole strategy with that film was to like. The whole story of that film was supposed to be about abstract expressionist painting. It was a metaphor for abstract expressionist painting because I like the fact that people think something is easy. The layperson think it's easy, but there's complexity in it.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of complexity in drag because people think just going down the road fast, but there's some strategy behind it. Mm. So I remember John Bowles, who was a brilliant man, who was the mechanic and drag racer. And then I talk about abstract expressionist painting and then he talked about drag racing, and we knew what we were talking about, so we understand, so I like this kind of internalizing, and I think I said this the other day, like internalizing intellectualism, so Art is intellectualizing the fight, intellectualizing round for round.
Yeah, that's,
and his experience. So I knew that, because I remember when I was talking to him, and then I said, well, I couldn't find the footage because I was going to reenact the footage. But then I said, all right, well, we'll just like have you talk for a whole role, which is like the whole 3 minute of the round. But then I abandoned that whole idea. But I still wanted him to talk for round. He said, man, I can't remember anything. I said, Art, make it up.
Yeah.
I'm just making cinema, right? But then, so he was like, remember, he was really working at it, because he actually would recall more than I thought.
I
was like, cool, whatever. And then, so even I miss, and even the way I was putting it together, I actually made some rounds, actually backstory for him, talking about him being incarcerated and talking about a previous fight that he had with Aaron Pryor. So I just kind of pushed that around and then went back to the Sugar Ray fight. So, yeah, I'm just trying to make a, for me, I'm trying to make an interesting thing about him, and trying to make an interesting film. But
But that was striking because, there's a lot of talk these days, especially I suppose with the proliferation of social media and multimedia tools being really accessible to people, like conversation and reflection on events that have passed is just happening a lot. But there's a lot of hip hop podcasts and shows.
Oh yeah.
But one of the things they rarely do is actually talk about the sound and the
craft.
Music. The
craft.
It's all about who said what. Are you going to do this to somebody? And so, and even with boxing, it's strange how there's a lot of reflection, but the boxers themselves really.
I remember one time I was at Sundance and I was doing some journalism, and I remember. Supposed to do some kind of blog or something like that. That was me some blog. This is a long time. It was 2006. It was like when blogs, I think, were big. And I was like, man, I don't know what to write. And I remember one time they told me, don't make it insider baseball. And that's basically like there's intricates of baseball that the viewer would know. Mm. And then so right in my mind, said, I'm making it totally insider baseball because that's all I know.
I don't know
how to communicate journalistically I think there's an ethics to journalists, and I was like, whatever. But I like to kind of make things up and then make it more. I like the complexity in things, and then if I talk about the complexity of things, well, then I think it'll, I like to, being a teacher, like I don't teach to their level, I teach to my level so they can rise up, And then so that's the thing I like to do. It's like, well, I'm gonna find all the insider baseball. I'm gonna break it down, But I think that's what athletes do; they break it down.
Yeah.
And then I think when you make an art. And then I think if you're a choreographer or even a musician, you're breaking it, just when you're building up something, you're breaking it down to put it back together, so to speak. So I think that's the only way that you're going to understand all the sophisticated relationships that go into it, is to kind of break it down. So,
and I think that all of that is in your work, and that's why I was sort of surprised that that friend of mine had said something so basic and simplistic and service.
I'm trying to break it down formally, but also the subject matter is trying to break it down. Yeah. And even the one with the cowboys, you know, they're like practicing calf rope and stuff like that. And then and if you really watch them, and then plus they were telling me about calf rope, because like I remember I like interviewed some cats and said, do you want me to, you know, describe calf rope? It was like, no, I want you to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and just have the viewer catch up, you know, so I like, you know, like because you know, the subject matter is like, I don't want to explain this. Like, I just want to do it. It's like, cool. You know, and then so, you know, have the viewer like kind of muscle, you know, like the viewer's got to, you know, come up to speed. So So I like that. And then so Art's just saying all this stuff about the fighting. I don't know if people even know about any. In fact, I remember I had one version, like, I think I just finished that film, like, 2 weeks before, you know, I came here.
Yeah.
And so, at one point, I forgot to put in the fight, you know, like, write the text at the beginning, said Art McKnight, Richard Sugar Ray, 1978. At first, I didn't put that in at first, because I was just, like, living it myself. I said, do a little communicating to the viewer.
Yeah.
But even, you know, I think that even made it more abstract, because who was Art McKnight? And a lot of people may not know who Sugar Ray is anymore. But, you know, maybe. So I think it kind of pulled away from it a little bit more. So I kind of liked it. But it took me a while to even do that, yeah.
But, you know, like when people talk about stuff to do with, like, beginner's mind, you know, there's, like, John Cage, and there's a big, like, his, like, casual Orientalism where he's like, I got into Zen, and everyone should aspire to the beginner's mind. When you come to something... the beginner's mind.
Yeah.
And I always felt like that's a bit of a lie, because sometimes, like, I used to play music, and the best I've ever felt was being, say, on tour after 30 dates. And then you do the 31st and, like, you know everything. It's totally, your muscles just do it.
Yeah.
And you can go somewhere else.
I think you could, like, I think where you can involve it as an artist, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I'm always like, I mean, that's a formal issue, I think, so than anything else. I mean, but I wouldn't tell anybody to practice that, you know? You know, and then, you know, that's just like, I don't know, just like going back to birth or something, you know? I think you want to kind of like move on, I think. And then, I think if you start doing that, I think you're right. I think every piece is going to look the same, you know, I think. Because it's always going to look like you just started it, so to speak.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, yeah.
So I'd like to, maybe, if we could just talk
about... But you were on tour? Were you a musician?
Yeah, I used to play... the show's not about me, but I used to play music, and I always... I know that sense of frustration, because, say, if you're trying to learn jazz, like, that is a real uphill climb, and it's all about hours. It's all about time.
Yeah.
And it's about time developing muscle memory and developing, like, neural connections can just lose when you're in the moment. So you're like, I'm not thinking, but you are, because it's all happened before.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that's how I approach. Because sometimes when I make films, I was like, is that going to work? And so, it works, because that's what I've been doing. You know, is that going to work?
You're like, it's not,
you know, because there's no script no more. It's all like the written on the back of my hand now. You know, it's like, is this going to work? And it's like, it should work. You know, because even I had the ring girl in that film, you know. So I like the physicality of it with the ring girl, like going around there, you know, because that's a kind of a job and a career.
Is there any moments where a film goes wrong? And you're like, what is it that you know? But say if you're shooting something, you know, like there's a couple of films that you showed the other day, Workers Leaving the Job Site, which was that footage, you're outside a some manual labor facility.
Yeah.
And as the workers are leaving, the film just captures all their characters as they walk past the camera.
Yeah.
Then another one was Rams 23. Blue Bears 21, and you were at a position at the end of a game to catch the crowd as they're walking past you.
Yeah.
Now, that's an instance of somebody sort of not really paying attention to what you're doing. Could be like, well, that's simple. You just set it up and let it roll.
Yeah.
But are there moments, say, when you're doing things like that, where you're like, nah, this is not working?
Not those kind of things.
Yeah.
But when I think the scripted films I make, they don't work, because I wish I would give it to Bradford Young to shoot or something like that, or give it to, like, I don't know, somebody to direct it. Because I'm always like, I was telling somebody the other day, like, I'm like those films, which is, I don't know why I do it. I'm always trying to finish it instead of work on it. And I like to work on things.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I like that.
And then so I'm trying to, so when I was in Florence and shooting Rhino, and everybody did a great job, and I was like hustling and stuff like that. But in my mind, I was like, let me get this done, you know, instead of like round seven, I was like, oh, I'm going to shoot this today. You know, what I'm about getting it done is working on it, you know. And then that's because I had more time and a little bit more resources. But it's mostly just when I'm like handcuffed by time.
And is that to do with also working with larger crew, like some of
the larger crew and getting people and then getting actors. And then also the script handcuffs me because I act like I got to get the script done. And then the script are pages. So I want to get this done. And so I should just like abandon it. I think that may be the last script I ever write.
Well, never say never. But.
Yeah. Because I just can't. I mean, I think the film turned out okay. I think I like it. And people worked on it. And
no, I think it's great.
But I just want to, I think it just should have been a little bit more, I don't know. I think it works, yeah. But then I learned, but this when I was seeing it the other day for the first time, I was like, oh. Yeah. I think it works, yeah.
And I think it's nice to see your films in relation to each other.
Well, it's good for you guys. I'm sitting there sweating.
Yeah.
It's like, does this work? It's like, oh, man, I haven't seen that in a while. So I was in the booth, like, I ain't seen it. Because, like, I normally just kind of walk around or whatever. And I was like, man, I haven't seen these films in a while. So I better have something to talk about. So I better look at them, yeah.
So, yeah, but like I was saying, I'd like to just briefly talk about representation. Because I think it's the burden. Basically, for a person of color making any kind of artwork, it's almost like you have to operate at a few different levels. Like you're just an individual making work, but also you're that subject position making work, and you're somebody who's transcending both, like your sort of racial subject position and your gender subject position, and you're just sort of making stuff. But you always seem to have to field questions and reactions relating to all those different spaces.
Yeah.
And
is the as we say in the States, a yardstick is different because we work with a meter stick and everybody works with a yardstick. Yeah, it's a different thing. Yeah.
But what was exciting for me about your films because I used to live in America.
Oh, where at?
In Chicago.
Yeah. Well, do you like Chicago? What, Southside?
Hyde Park.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What are you doing over there?
Well, I'm staying with my gran. She
so it's all about you.
Yeah, it's all about me. Yeah, you're turning it back. But I just want to, the reason I'm saying that, I don't normally, but like, it's because I recognize that existence in your films, you know? But I recognize that social milieu. Yeah. Or like when you, in Rams 23, Blue Bears 21, just a difference in people. Everybody's really different. It's just like, rather than it being African American life, it occurred to me that it's just life, and that was what was important to me.
Yeah, I mean, I always think, you know, I always say this, that, you know, there's 49 million black Americans. There's more black American than Canadian, so you know, why can't we be diverse and stuff like that?
And then
people don't accept. And even the black community think we all should be the same, but we're very diverse people and stuff. And even, you know, I always say Southside, Chicago, but there's North Philly, you know, there's all these kind of, you know, like there's East Cleveland, you know, East St. Louis, you know, there's all these kind of, and then all of them have the different ways of walking, talking, moving and grooving and stuff like that. So I like that as form, whatever,
And it's good that comes into your film because I think the perception of America that we have in England is very narrow.
Well, the perception of a black American in America is very narrow too, as well.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, even scenes like in Erie where you have the two fences and it's like you can see people being like, wow, I've never experienced that before. And you're just like, that's because you're not allowed past a certain representational barrier. But you know, that it's funny because, like I say, your film is about your work is about that, but it's not about that. It has that duplicity. It has that.
I think I want to see certain things, so I put them on screen, and then so it's not like, you know, I'm trying to tell people that, like, oh, we can do this. It's like, we do this.
Yeah.
You know, like, we didn't, you know, I mean, I ain't asked for your permission. you know, I'm like, you know, this is what's happening, you know. So, I like to kind of, I like to kind of, like, have it like that, you know. And, you know, it's like, we just don't do this. We've been doing this. So it's like kind of a verb, you know, like a past tense, you know, because somebody had to teach those calf ropers that kind of what that kind of rodeo is. So they have been doing it for like families and generations and stuff. So here it is, right at the end of the film, we're in this kind of rodeo that they built. But you don't kind of know it, but then you know that it's somebody, you know, it's on somebody's property, and then they kind of built it. So then there is a history of that, you know. So I like, you know, and then that's just a little bit of gesture or whatever. And plus, we went there so we can just shoot too as well. But when we went there, I was like, oh man, I'll make sure this is going to be framed up pretty good. Yeah. So we know that people have been doing this, and I don't go in there and say that, oh, we've been doing it. I'm saying, like, these cats been doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just about them. It ain't about the kind of – but then, so it ended up being about the kind of the big thing, you know, I think, when people see it. But no, like, it's more about Fred Mayberry and his family doing it. You know, and then so that leads to that kind of backstory, I think, yeah.
And you said that you came to, I think, art late. Well, not late, but 19.
Like 19, yeah, yeah, 18, yeah. 19, taking drawing classes.
But you
college,
strike me as someone who had like quite an active, like imaginative interior
just
life.
Play sports, I don't know.
You just play sports?
Yeah.
No graffiti?
No. No, we didn't have that. You know, we didn't have that back then. I mean, I'm an old man, so we didn't have that. Yeah, I was... Like, that was before, like, I mean, I'm small town in Ohio, man. We didn't have trains to paint on. I was a soul boy, and then I got into hip-hop, I guess, when I was in college, because that was 79 when Rappers in Light came out, so I was, like, a freshman in high school, so.
Wow. Yeah. I wanted to ask you about music, because you don't really,
you don't use a lot of it.
Yeah, you don't use a lot of it, but I wonder, does music propel your practice in some way?
Yeah. I mean, I like soul music, how it kind of transforms me or moves me or like kind of like the like I only hear music like the one I'm either running or driving, so I'm always in like moving, although I've been on the plane listening to music lately. But then, you know, the fact I like that kind of thing, but in the films I don't know, I don't use it a lot. How Can We Be Late, because that was about Sly Stone, so the kids hooked me up with that, Sandy and the crew.
But I guess, like, you know, when I came to the screening, you were playing music.
Oh, yeah, they asked me for. And I was struggling with that because I couldn't think of anything, yeah. But that was, like, mostly hip-hop that sampled soul, I think. That was from the early 90s, I think, stuff. Yeah.
But, I mean, I was just trying to get at, like, what was there some sort of creative activity that was pulling, you know, that was attractive for you before that 19? No, you were just chilling. You were just playing sports. What sports were you playing?
American football, baseball, and basketball. Oh, you know, I was just like a kid.
The trilogy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was just a kid. Skateboarding when I was young. I don't know, just whatever. Just play, that's what the kids in the neighborhood were doing. So,
how did you, like... When it happened at 19, what was the...
18. Well, I mean, you know, I was like, you know, I wasn't a very good high school student. Mm-hmm. I was in all the smart class, but I just didn't apply myself. Yeah. I didn't know how to study. I just wasn't into it. And plus, also, I have a speech impediment. Mm-hmm. So there's certain days it would be really bad, so I wouldn't ask questions. People thought I was like, so still to this day, I probably haven't said this out loud, at least that much. But I won't read in public, because I'll start studying. And then so I'm afraid that people think I'm going to be slow or not smart, so to speak. So even at my university, I avoid a lot of things, you know, because of my speech impediment. So I think that kind of, like, makes me kind of an observer, you know, like more an observationist and more in a participant, so to speak. So I can stand back and look at things, whatever. So when I went to school, I was like, I said, I like politics because I was all doing this political stuff when I was in high school. I was like, yeah, but that's a lot of reading, right? You know, and then I like horticulture because I got into that actually as a high school student. In fact, that's what I was really.
Horticulture?
Yeah. So I wanted to be a botanist, but that's a lot of science. And I said, well, let me just try this art. But then art was really heavy. You know, I was like, oh man, there's a lot of art history, you know, and then so, like, I didn't know anything about that just coming into it. So I think I got into art by what default because I was afraid, and then I was kind of cowardice of the other the disciplines, and I was afraid I was going to be exposed, you know. And then so I realized I can express things other than like with voice and with text, I guess, so to speak, because I wasn't a good writer and wasn't a good speaker or whatever. So it took me a while to kind of come up in college, and I mean, I'm surprised I got into college, I think. But but I excelled like when I got in there. So, yeah.
All the good people are surprised when they get into college. Oh, I think,
oh really?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people were surprised the other way. Because I remember growing up that there was like some of my peers, mostly my white peers who went off to college, they couldn't handle it because they were like drinking and stuff and they got flunked out.
For
me, I was like, man, you know, all about that. I was just trying to like just kind of keep up with the rest of the. You know, of intellectual, and then so I just like being an intellectual and like intellectualizing things. Mm. And I think I always done that, and even in sports, I was always like, you know, I think my last years of football, I didn't really like because of the the coach. Well, because my first years of football, I really liked my coach, and then so he would let us intellectualize the game, you know, he would let us like play it. And then
like
the later years,
Vince Lombardo type, like a Vince Lombardo, like you know,
yeah, or just like it was more jazz. It's like y'all figure it out there. And then so we would like it together, and
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah, so we were in the huddle, like so we, you know, so we were ahead of the, you know. But then I think my last years, like I guess the person didn't trust us with that. Mm. So then we're out there like instead of playing a game, we were running plays, and I'd be in a huddle like. It's second down, you know, that's the game. You know, I don't think we were into the game. Like, all of us were into the game as much as we should have been. Mm. So I like, and then so that kind of the discipline was actually interesting. Like how, you know, because you got to be kind of all in to kind of do it. So I think that kind of got into the art, whatever. You know, I think a lot, because I remember just when I was making sculptures, I'd make like 10 things instead of one. People thought it was like more because of the factory mentality. Because I used to work in factories in college. And then the assembly line approach, but it mostly was more like, you know, I knew the last one would be better than the first one. Mm-hmm. And then be like the whole idea of the practice and the game, you know, and then it's kind of just being all in and just kind of get in all into it. So I think sports was more, when people like to write about the factory stuff, but I think it was more sports than it was the kind of, you know, factory conditions I was in. Yeah.
This is great quote. By Truman Capote, where he's talking about art, and he's sort of saying, he's talking about, you know, piano players and athletes as well, and it's sort of saying, you know, that a piano player doesn't wake up the next day and just become a concert pianist. He's like, there's a history of like preparation, rehearsal, sometimes I feel like it is missing a little bit from art, and so people might get disheartened when they think, why did you just flow out of me? But
I think a lot of people think, I think all this immediately, because I remember when people say, oh, you think like the digital age was going to like make film accessible to everybody? It's like, no, because it's harder than what it looks, whatever. Yeah. I think, so they think, you know, people think people be on and YouTube making films, they make films back, but then like they were submitting to the what. They're not creating subject matter. They're submitting to the cat. Because they make films about cats. So they're submitting to the cats, but they're not, which is cool because I like cats. But then, you know, but they're not creating subject matter with the cats, so, you know, like to speak. So, and then, like, that's the separation, whatever. So,
we've come into the end of the show. It's gone pretty fast. But because I wanted to ask you about teaching, and I wanted to ask and I was really interested, you know, what you just said then about teaching to your level so that the students can raise up to that. I think that's so important. I think the art you produce does that as well. You know?
Yeah. I like to, you know, I like to have an adult conversation and like in class. And I remember even when I was trying to teach the way I wasn't taught or I was taught, you know, and I remember all the moments where somebody older than me would respected me, you know, and then so they would like be more curious about you. So I'm always doing that. I'm always trying to teach like that and stuff. And then I'm always working for working for the kids. All because even when I was here, I was like, how can I like share stuff with them? So I don't know. That's part of the game. So I can justify me being on the road, like all the time, whatever.
If I could ask you, what piece of advice you would give, say, a young budding filmmaker or artist?
Finish, because people don't finish anything. Yeah, they'll work. They just work on it and finish it and see what works. And then, so for me, it's all about the sophomore effort. You know, is what you learn from that first piece, because only you can teach yourself that. Yeah. So for me, it's always about, you know, like I think if you're a musician and then you're 28 years old is when your first album came out. It took you 28 years to do it. So now you got 18 months to turn around the next joint, right? Now, and so what did you learn from that? Whatever. So I think it's always like finish, and then you look at what you did to kind of move on, whatever. Yeah, yeah. Because you always got to look at your, because your work will tell you what to do next. Yeah. Thank you.